Thank you, Mr. Nick. Good afternoon, everyone. I agree with Mr. Nick. I love that our ensemble, I guess would be the word for it, is growing and accompanying our songs. I really appreciate that. This past weekend, we awoke Sunday morning to the horrible news that a gunman had attacked innocent people right here in our town. Of course, this followed the news that we had heard just earlier, the day before, that the same thing had happened in El Paso. I don't know about you, but it was very disheartening to wake up to that. I actually fell asleep in front of the television, and I woke up Sunday morning at 6:30, and they were talking. And at first, my mind wasn't, like, completely there, and I thought they were talking about the shootings in El Paso, but as the story kept going and my mind started getting clearer, I realized they were talking about downtown Dayton. And it was very sad to wake up to that. Unfortunately, this is not a rare thing anymore. The amount of mass shootings across the United States has outpaced the number of days this year. According to a gun violence research group, 2019 is on pace to be a year with an average of more than one mass shooting per day. As of August 5th, which was the 217th day of the year, there have been 255 mass shootings in the U.S. This nonprofit group, Gun Violence Archive, which tracks every mass shooting in the country, defines a mass shooting as any incident in which at least four people were shot, excluding the shooter. The toll of 255 mass shootings that have happened this year include five high-profile massacres in the past 8 days in which more than 100 people have been shot. This includes the shooting in Dayton. Those numbers may seem pretty phenomenal to you, and you may be thinking, well, I haven't heard of that many mass shootings. The sad part is, this is not too far off the norm. The last time mass shootings topped the number of days in the year was just 3 years ago, 2016. 2016, we had 382 mass shootings, the most since any year that they had been keeping track of these things. And the past 2 years have not been too far off. In 2017, there were 346, and in 2018, there were 340. These terrible, tragic events are literally everyday occurrences in the United States. In some cities, it's so common, they don't even make the news outside of the city. How many of you were aware that there were two mass shootings in Chicago last weekend? I was surprised that all we heard about was El Paso and Dayton. A few of you have heard of them, but in fact, in Chicago, dozens of people were shot last weekend. Two mass shootings in less than 3 hours apart on Sunday. In all, seven people were killed and 46 others were wounded in the shootings from Friday through Sunday, just in the city of Chicago. In fact, I read somewhere that the certain hospitals were saying, don't bring any more to us. Our emergency room is full. One thing that always happens after a mass shooting event is people start looking for motives. That was the first thing that was being talked about after this one in Dayton, was they were very cautious to say no motive has been established yet. And they want to start looking for motives. I think sometimes if we can determine a motive, maybe it makes it seem less random. Maybe it makes it seem like it's not going to just happen again and again. Maybe we can be a little bit more at ease with the situation if there can be a reason why somebody would do what they've done. So after a mass shooting, they begin to dissect the shooter's life. They start going through everything. What pushed this person to this point? What made this person come out in the middle of an innocent group of people and open fire and start killing people randomly? Sometimes they come up with a reason. For instance, if it's at a workplace shooting where coworkers and management are shot, then they can go back to a hostile work environment or maybe a missed promotion. And they can give some sort of reasoning as to why this person would go in and carry out such a violent act on these people. But they never really get to the motive. We can look at a person's situation and we can see that their life is not going the way they want it to go. But that's not really a motive for what's happening in the United States right now. What would cause somebody to walk into a Walmart store and randomly shoot people who are shopping for back-to-school supplies? Of course, they're, you know, trying to find a blame for this and a reason, and I've heard everything from it's President Trump's fault to it's the immigrants' fault to it's white supremacists' fault. They're looking for some sort of a reason as to why someone would do something like that. Is it politically charged? Is it racism? These reasonings don't get to the heart of the matter either. There are a lot of people who are very strong in their political opinion. There are a lot of people who have even racist attitudes, but they don't resort to going in and shooting people. Some people want to blame the guns themselves, and that argument comes up every time, right? If only we didn't have guns, no one would kill anybody. It's already illegal to kill people. I mean, we already have rules. A lot of times it's not pointed out. I mean, we get it a lot if the guns are legally obtained. They'll say, well, this person legally obtained this gun and then he went and did this. But a lot of times the guns are stolen. And that's never brought out. A law would not have stopped that person from doing what they did. There's something like, I forget what the number was now, many millions of people in the United States who have guns. And they have trillions of rounds of ammunition. Guns aren't the problem. There's more to the story. There's a sinister element that's never explored when something like this happens. When something so horrible that we can't comprehend it starts happening, and everyone starts looking for the reasoning, there's one thing that's always overlooked. It's a sinister element that many in the world don't even believe exists. There's one primary cause behind the suffering and tragic circumstances that affect so many people. I think you all know who I'm talking about. The Bible reveals that a powerful, intelligent, and vastly influential being actively orchestrates the wickedness that dominates our planet. Of course, I'm talking about the one that the Bible calls most often the devil or Satan. Once again, it's an element that is never even explored when something like this happens. A central message of the Bible from the beginning to the end is that the devil is the enemy of all humanity. It is his personal goal to destroy us all. He wages war against man in every way imaginable. The very name Satan, the designation that the Bible uses most for this evil being, helps us to understand what his goal is. This is a name that God gave him. Names mean a lot to God. Satan means adversary. He's the enemy. the opponent, the antagonist, the foe. He is anti everything that God stands for. The other term the Bible uses to describe him is the devil. Devil is translated from the Greek word diablos, the root from which we get the word diabolical, used to describe something wicked or sinister. These are the names given to the enemy. He's an accuser, a slanderer. Satan is an adversary. He's an adversary of God, but he's also an adversary of us. He wants to destroy us. 1 Peter 5 and verse 8, we're warned to be sober, to be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. I read somewhere that up to 2/3 of the United States population does not believe in Satan. They don't think he exists. And he's been portrayed as a recruiting element, if you will, for churches. Someone, a being that was created in order that churches could get followers because they needed an enemy. We don't have to create the enemy. He's out there. And that's why we're told to be vigilant, to be sober, to realize that he is real. And honestly, I would want him to be real looking at the world's situation. I would want to think that there's something other than just us that is causing mankind to go that way. But 2/3 of the United States doesn't even believe in him. And I don't know about the rest of the world, what their belief is. I would assume it's even less because most of them aren't Christians. But how can you watch out for an enemy and be sober and be vigilant and stand against him if you don't even believe he exists? Again, this is an avenue that's never even explored when something awful and tragic happens in the world. Satan wants to devour you. He wants to destroy you. He wants to divide you from God and keep you separate and then attack and destroy. Let's look at some scriptures that explain where this adversary came from. He didn't start out that way. We know he's a created being. And if we know anything about God, God doesn't create evil. God doesn't create things in a messed up state. Even the earth, when we read that the earth was without form and void, if we put together certain scriptures, we can discover that the earth was created beautifully. In fact, it says at one point, I didn't write this down, I'm sorry, but the angels sang when the earth was created. The angels wouldn't gather around something void and destructed and sing about the beauty of it. The earth was created beautiful. That's the way God starts things. We know the earth became void. The earth became destroyed. And we're pretty sure Satan had his part in that as well. But let's go back to the beginning of Satan. Isaiah 14, starting in verse 12. We see him here called by a different name. And that name is Lucifer. And of course, that name has a very negative connotation today. No one would name their child Lucifer. But it's actually a very magnificent name. It means bringer of light or morning light. Day star. Isaiah 14, starting in verse 12. How you have fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning. How you are cut down to the ground, you who weakened the nations. For you have said in your heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will also sit in the mount of the congregation. On the farthest sides of the north, I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Some translations render this to say, I will be the Most High. Satan had plans. He was going to remove God from his position and take that position himself. Ezekiel calls Lucifer the anointed cherub who covers, which means he was one of the chief angels whose wings covered God's throne. He is specifically shown to be a created being, possibly, and you may have not considered it this way before, but possibly the most beautiful, wise, and perfect of God's creation. As I said, Satan didn't start out being Satan. He started out being Lucifer, the bringer of light, the morning star, a beautiful creation. We can read about this over in Ezekiel chapter 28. If you'll turn over to Ezekiel 28, starting in verse 12, we'll be reading through verse 17. Both Ezekiel 28 and Isaiah 14 that we just read kind of goes back and forth between an earthly king and Satan. But you can tell when it's talking about Satan, because words are used that would never describe a human being. Ezekiel 28, starting in verse 12, says, Son of man, take up lamentation for the king of Tyre and say to him, Thus says the Lord God, you were the seal of perfection, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. That's talking about Lucifer, the seal of perfection. Verse 13, you were in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone was your covering, the sardius, topaz, and diamond, beryl, onyx, and jasper, sapphire, turquoise, and emerald with gold. The workmanship of your timbrels and pipes was prepared for you on the day you were created. You were the anointed cherub who covers. I established you. You were on the holy mountain of God. You walked back and forth in the midst of fiery stones. Doesn't that sound like something pretty special to God? It sounds like Lucifer had special privileges, that he was created in a way that set him apart from the other angelic beings. Verse 15, you were perfect in your ways from the day you were created till iniquity was found in you. Something happened, and Lucifer changed. Iniquity was found in him. Like man, God gave the angels free moral agency. They weren't just created without any thought process. They weren't robotic in nature as far as worshiping God and being a part of his family and existing peacefully with him. Apparently, they were given the option as to whether or not they would continue that way. And Satan decided not to continue that way. Verse 15 tells us iniquity was found in him. Verse 16 says, By the abundance of your trading, you became filled with violence within. We see evidence of that today in our society. And you sinned. Therefore, I cast you as a profane thing out of the mountain of God, and I destroyed you, O covering cherub, from the midst of the fiery stones. Your heart was lifted up because of your beauty. You corrupted your wisdom for the sake of your splendor. I cast you to the ground. I laid you before kings that they might gaze at you. This mighty angel grew proud and vain in his beauty. Something God had given him. The way he was created, he became vain. He began to become envious of God's position. He didn't like God's authority over the universe. At some point, He decided he should be the one in charge of the universe. He should be the number one spot. He didn't want to be the cherub that covered. He wanted to be the being that was covered. He wanted God's position. Over the course of time, maybe millions of years, we're not told exactly how long or when all this happened, but he schemed and started working on other angelic beings. And he got them thinking about their position, where they were. Were they being treated fairly? Was this right for them? Did they deserve more, as Lucifer thought that he did? Finally, he had enough support, he thought, to cause a rebellion. And in an attempt to overthrow God, he and his demons were cast back down to the earth. We're told in Revelation 12 and verse 4, when he finally did lead this one-third of the angels to go to war against God in heaven, Revelation 12 and verse 4 says, his tail drew a third of the stars of heaven and threw them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was ready to give birth to devour her child as soon as it was born. One-third of the angels were thrown back to the earth with him. Jude puts this in an interesting way in Jude 1 verse 6. Jude 1 and verse 6 says, and the angels who did not keep their proper domain but left their own abode, he has reserved in everlasting chains under darkness for the judgment of the great day. Jude says the angels that rebelled with Satan, they were not content with where God had put them. Satan convinced them it was not enough. And I'm sure that what they had was quite phenomenal. We know how generous God is. We know the blessings that he pours out on his creation. But Satan was able to convince these angels what they had was not enough. They deserved more. God was being unfair to them. So they became discontent with where God had placed them, and they joined the rebellious ranks with Satan. We turn back to Revelation 12, verse 7. We'll be reading verses 7 through 10. We read, and war broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels fought with the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought. There are only three named angels that we're told of, and that's Michael, Gabriel, and Lucifer, who, of course, became Satan. Here we see a war breaking out. Michael and his angels fought with the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought. Verse 8, but they did not prevail, nor was a place found for them in heaven any longer. So the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was cast to the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. Then I heard a loud voice in heaven, now the salvation and strength and kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ have come, for the accuser of our brethren, who accused them before our God day and night, has been cast down. So we see one of the things that Satan is doing constantly. It says day and night, the accuser of the brethren. You ever think about someone talking about you behind your back? You might think, well, that's not happening. Who would talk about me behind my back? Well, Satan goes before God day and night, accusing each one of us. God cast him and his angelic troops back to the earth. Christ spoke about this in Luke 10 and verse 18. He said to the people around him, I saw Satan fall like lightning from heaven. Satan's plan failed. He was not able to overthrow God, to dethrone God. And he was thrown out of heaven back down to the earth. But he's continued to try to get at God's plan, to work against God in every way possible. Specifically, he's been working to foil God's plan to increase his family. Satan introduced division between God and his creation. He wanted to stop God from increasing his family through his newly created human beings. He deceived our first parents, and he's been working the same deception ever since. He continues to this day to deceive. We're told he's deceived the entire world, as we just read in Revelation 12 and verse 9. Let's go back and look at that first deception. Let's see what tools Satan used against our early parents to get them to also reject God. The story begins at the very origins of mankind, as stated in the book of Genesis. I think it's pretty interesting to think that God's given us the creation, or the story of creation. We know our beginning as a race of people, as a created beings. We're taken all the way back to the very beginning. God created our first parents, Adam and Eve, and he placed them in a beautiful garden. Again, the earth was fixed back up, recreated, if you will. And I can only imagine the beauty that was there at that time. Because this time God was going to place mankind on the earth. And this was for them. He created a beautiful garden, a paradise, the Garden of Eden, and placed our very first parents there. And he began to personally instruct them. God wanted a relationship with human beings from the very beginning. Personally instructing them. We read about this in Genesis 2, verses 16 and 17. Genesis 2, starting in verse 16, the Lord commanded the man, saying, "Of every tree in the garden you may freely eat, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat, for in that day you eat of it, you will surely die." God was interacting with Adam, personally instructing him on how to have a relationship with him, telling him what he should and should not do. He was personally teaching him right from wrong. But again, man was created with free moral agency. Were we going to develop that relationship with God? Were we going to have that relationship that God wanted? The choice was man's. Unfortunately, something happened that derailed that relationship very quickly. The teachings of God, the personal teachings that God came down and spoke to Adam, were called into question. Did God really have mankind's best interest at heart? Or was God being unfair? Genesis 3 and verse 1. Now the serpent was more cunning than any beast in the field which the Lord God had made. And he said to the woman, "Has God indeed said you shall not eat of every tree in the garden?" Notice the attitude that Satan started with. He didn't come in and say, "Wow, God has given you a beautiful house. Look at this garden. This is a beautiful place to live. I could have never imagined this in all my creativity." No. What did he do? He called into question what they could not have. Did God really say you can't have this? Out of everything God gave them, God said you can have everything but this. Satan came and said, "God's not letting you have that? Wow, he's not being fair, is he?" What they could have way outnumbered what they could not have. Yet Satan was able to twist it around just enough to make them think they were missing something. Remember what Jude said about the angels when they rebelled? They were not content with what they had. They were not content to be where God had placed them. It's the same argument Satan used to deceive the angels. You could have so much more. God's withholding from you. Who is this God to restrict you? Going on, Genesis 3, reading verses 2 through 5. And the woman said to the serpent, "We may eat the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, 'You shall not eat it, nor shall you touch it, lest you die.'" So that tells us right there, they knew the rules. God had specifically told them personally, and they understood. And Eve even started out by saying, "Well, we can have all this stuff. We just can't have that one that you keep bringing up." Verse 4, "And then the serpent said to the woman, 'You're not going to die. For God knows in the day that you eat of it, your eyes will be open and you will be like God, knowing good and evil.'" You will be like God. What was Satan offering Adam and Eve? The very thing he wanted. He was going to ascend to be like God. He told them, "You can be God. You can decide what is right and wrong. You can call the shots. You will have the knowledge." He offered them the exact same thing that he wanted. Eve believed the serpent. She took the fruit. She ate it. She shared it with Adam. And they set in motion a tragic set of events. They decided to go their own way. They put themselves under Satan's deceptive influence rather than the truth of God. They followed Satan rather than the way that God had been teaching them. Life for man would never be the same. Sin was introduced. A division between God and mankind had entered our line. Mankind would now reap that tragic fruit of rebelling against God and going their own way. Adam and Eve's surrender to Satan's influence was the beginning of what is now called this present evil age. There was nothing evil about the age before Satan deceived them. Satan was able to convince them that God was lying to them. He falsely accused God of holding back on them. He told them that there was so much more that they could have than just this relationship with God. He accused God of being a liar. Satan was able to convince Eve that God possessed the very character flaws that he himself had. God pronounced that the price of sin would be death, and that is what entered into mankind's line. Notice what Christ said about Satan in John 8. John 8, verse 44, Christ says, "You are of your father, the devil, and the desires of your father you want to do. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own resources, for he is a liar and the father of it." That's John 8, verse 44. Christ said that Satan was a murderer from the beginning. What was that beginning? It had to have been when God created beings that could die. That was the beginning. Humans became subject to death if they sinned. That did not occur until Adam and Eve were created. and rebelled against God. Satan introduced murder when he convinced Adam and Eve to take an action that would cause their death. He was a murderer from the beginning. His deception led directly to their deaths. And not just theirs, but we know that ever since then, no one has lived that has not sinned. Satan has a part in the death of every one of us. He has continued to be a murderer. As you know, not long after they took of the fruit, rebelled against God, violence entered the world. The first recorded murder of man on man took place very shortly afterwards. We see right away that just going away from God's way of life took a very ugly turn very early. This present evil age that we live in now is a result of Satan's leadership. Once again, it's a motive that is never even explored when bad things happen. So why is the world so full of misery? The answer revealed in God's word is simple. And we can trace it all the way back to Adam and Eve. Galatians 6, verse 7 and 8. Galatians 6, verse 7 and 8 gets to the heart of the matter that we were made free moral agencies. We get to decide how we're going to live our lives. Galatians 6, verse 7, do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. For he who sows to his own flesh will of the flesh reap corruption, but he who sows to the Spirit will of the Spirit reap everlasting life. Our actions bring consequences. Much of the world's suffering can be traced to people's actions and decisions. Of course, there's natural disasters that happen, and those are just time and chance things that happen. But most of the world's suffering is mankind's fault. Some ill-thought-out decision along the way causes pain and suffering for millions of people. Most of the actions and decisions are based on the thinking of Satan. I don't know if you read the E! News last night or not, but I was asked to write a commentary about my thoughts on the shooting in Dayton. One of the things I wrote was that we live in a nation that is distancing itself from God and whose flag is flown at half staff far too often. The thing is, most people can't make the correlation between those two items. That as we distance ourselves from God, more and more tragic things will happen in our nation. We will continue to suffer with senseless acts of violence and destruction. And we will continue to look for the reasonings behind it. And for the most part, the world will not come to understand what those reasonings are. We must be different in our lives. We've been called to follow God, to not come under the influence of Satan, to not let Satan rule in our lives. We need to realize that Satan is real. Satan is attacking us every day, and that we must fight against him. We have to allow the sacrifice of Christ to help build that chasm between God and man. You know, I think it's interesting that someone whose fault started out with vanity, as Satan did, is perfectly fine if people don't believe he exists. You know, he placed himself so high at that time, but now he's fine if people don't think he exists. because it's easier to deceive someone if they don't think you are real. We must not fall into that trap, because that works very well for him. That is how he deceives the world. Satan is real, and he is our enemy. And we've been given instructions on how to get him away from us. We need to distance him from our lives, like he wants to distance God from our lives. James 4, starting in verse 7. James 4, verses 7 through 8. We're told, therefore, submit to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. The instructions are clear. Submit to God is the first step. Of course, that's the one thing Satan just didn't want to do. He just couldn't bring himself to submit to God. Can we? We need to submit to God. We need to realize that God's way is the best way for us, the best way for us to live our lives. It's the one thing Satan's been campaigning since the beginning of time for man to ignore, and that is submission to God. We then must resist the devil. And we're told that if we are submitting to God and resisting the devil, that he will flee from us. That's good news. He will flee from us. Our instructions continue to draw near to God, and he will be able to draw near to us. And then we're told to cleanse our hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts. We have to actively seek to eliminate Satan's way of thinking from our lives. That is how you resist the devil. You know, it's one thing that you can get him to flee. We're told, resist him and he'll flee. But he's not going to stay away. You know, I think sometimes you could scare a wild animal away from you if you made a loud noise or did something quick enough that caught it off guard. You could scare a wild animal away from you, but sooner or later it's going to circle back around. It's going to come back. It's going to realize it's got the upper hand. So there are things we must be doing. Once we have let him flee from us, we have to stay on guard. And that means being fully equipped. If you'll turn over to Ephesians 6, verses 10 through 18. Ephesians 6, verses 10 through 18. We've read this many times, and possibly you may know this as memory scriptures, and that's great, but we need to really incorporate this into our lives daily. We need to realize the battle is happening every day. Ephesians 6, starting in verse 10. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. The New International Version says, stand against the devil's schemes. He's constantly scheming against us, and we need to have this whole armor on to stand against it, to be ready for it, to recognize it. Verse 12, for we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. That's a big battle. That's a huge enemy. We need to be prepared for this battle. Verse 13, therefore take up the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. The whole armor. Again, this is something we need to review regularly. And you know, some of the armor is good, but not having all the armor will leave weak spots. So we need to make sure we have on the whole armor of truth. the whole armor of God, starting in verse 14. Stand therefore, having girded your waist with truth, having put on the breastplate of righteousness, having shod your feet with the preparation of the gospel of peace, and above all, taking the shield of faith with which you will be able to quench the fiery darts of the wicked one. There's fiery darts coming at you constantly. We need that shield of faith. Verse 17, and take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God, praying always with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit, being watchful to this end with all perseverance and supplication for all the saints. The armor of God is our defense against Satan. We should study this often and make sure that we do have on every piece of this protection. There is good news, though. There's good news coming about Satan and his rule over mankind. We're entering into the fall holy days, and of course these are very exciting times to think about. Days that have yet to be fulfilled. Days that we're looking forward to, because we know this is going to be the turn of events. Mankind's suffering will be coming to an end. Satan's rule will come to an end. When this happens, things like shootings that took place over the weekend will no longer take place. The separation between God and man will be removed. What will it take for mankind to stop hurting mankind? Sometimes I listen to the news in the morning and I think, I don't even know how I would begin to fix this problem. Isaiah 11, verse 9. What will it take for mankind to stop hurting mankind? Isaiah 11, verse 9. They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain. For the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. When the earth is full of the knowledge of the Lord, there will no longer be hurt nor destruction. The underlying, unseen, evil influence will be removed. The one who is deceiving the world, who is blinding the world from God's instructions, will be removed. The deceptions of Satan that he has built into our society will be seen for what they are: destructful, harmful, and separating man from God. The good news is in Revelation 11 and verse 15, if you'll turn over there. As I said, the fall holy days are coming up, and we'll hear more about the removal of Satan and what the world will be like when he is gone. But after these events from last weekend, I just thought it would be a good time to go over some of what is happening behind the scenes that the world doesn't know. Revelation 11, verse 15 says, the seventh angel sounded, and there were loud noises in heaven, saying, the kingdoms of this world have become the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever. Satan will be dethroned. The very thing that Satan tried to do to God will be done to him. He will be removed from his position of influence, of power. He will no longer be listened to. He won't be able to accuse us, because we will have a relationship with God. God will be speaking to us. God will be once again interacting with his creation. Satan's world, built on a foundation of lies and corruption and deception, is going to come crashing down, and it's going to be replaced by God's kingdom of light and truth. This is something we can all look forward to. Until then, this underlying reason of evil happenings and awful things that take place in our world will continue to guide mankind as we go throughout these end days. Satan is the reason that violence has occurred. Satan is the reason that things like these mass shootings enter into somebody's mind and they follow through with it. He's the reason that violence has occurred since before the creation of mankind and continues to this day. He's the father of so many things that are wrong and evil. All these things are going to continue. And we need to pray to God for our safety and the safety of those around us. It was very sad that this happened in Dayton. It's one of those things you always think happened somewhere else. And for it to have happened in our home city was a very tragic thing. It made it even that much more real. Not that we don't feel compassion for those in other places when things happen, as we all should. We, of course, should hold no grudge against anybody because of where they were born or their political view. We should not inflict hurt or destruction on anybody. But there are people in the world that will, because they're under Satan's influence. So let's do as we're told, to resist Satan, to let him flee from us, to draw close to God, and to be alert, to realize that he is out there, he is our enemy, and he does want to destroy us.